Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
It is the Stokely and Zach show. It is not Stokely and Zach.
Happy Friday. John Drotar with you, normally the host of The Fan Late Night. Troy Rank will be joining me for the remainder of the program in just a little bit, but you just heard him not too long ago with Orlando Franklin. James Merrillat, sticking around. Just, you know, grinder. Just, it's trying to be a Friday. You're not ready to start your weekend. You're just still in it.
Yeah. I just have more that I want to say, more that I want to put out there on the Drew Locke, Teddy Bridgewater thing. Couldn't get it all out there in 3 hours. So here we go. You get a little bit more of me. We'll put it that way.
Well, now you had a couple days to process it. And I know that you, like many fans, in fact, I won't even say many. I'll say the vast majority of Broncos fans, the vast majority, wanted Drew Locke to win this job. And I guess before we even start, I will say this. So did the Denver Broncos. Make no mistake that the best option for the Broncos was for Drew Locke to win this job, prove that he was a solid NFL starting quarterback, and then they've solved their biggest problem. However, even though the Broncos did want Locke to win this job, they found themselves in a weird spot, James, because last year, when they cleared the decks, right, there was no challenge for Drew Locke. You had Jeff Driscoll. He wasn't going to be any impact. The idea was, we're riding with Drew Locke, John Elway likes to say. Plan B, we're going with Plan A, right?
Yeah.
And the idea behind having Locke the starter all year is, you know, you're going to take the bumps and bruises that come with giving a guy the keys to the car for a first full year. And it didn't work out. And now you have a situation where the coaching staff is no longer basically allowed to say, hey, if you start Drew Locke and start losing games, well, now it's on you. So you have the front office that may be looking towards the longer term with a Drew Locke, although we'll have to set aside that George Payton brought in his own guy, Teddy Bridgewater, nevertheless. And now you have a coaching staff who has to win right now. So unlike last year, you kind of run into a situation where the Broncos no longer have everybody pulling on the same end of the rope. That's part of what's led to this.
Oh, it's completely what's led to this. It's the fact that it's a disjointed organization. You have a general manager who should be able to look at things from a big picture, long-term perspective. He's got a six-year contract. But you have a head coach who quite literally, Sean, has three games.
Yes.
If they're 0-3 at the end of September, he's done.
What's up, Mike Munchak?
Yeah, Vic Fangio is gone. So that you could not have a bigger discrepancy in terms of front office and head coach being on different wavelengths, different pages in terms of what the goal is, right? Vic Fangio has to win right away. He has to win at the Giants, at the Jaguars, and home against the Jets, at least two out of those three, or it is sayonara to not only his job here, but probably his opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL.
Yes.
So did the Broncos, as some sort of collective thing, did they want Drew Locke to win the job? Maybe. But Vic Fangio was going with Teddy Bridgewater from the moment they brought him in. I don't know, unless Teddy Bridgewater went out there and fell flat on his face in training camp, which there weren't many days where he was better than Drew Locke, certainly not many days where he was significantly better than Drew Locke, or unless he fell on his face in preseason games, which he was really, really good. I'm Team Drew, and I'll be the first one to admit Teddy was good, but so was Drew. He was going to get the job because Vic Fangio is all about those first three games. If you gave him truth serum, do I think John Elway, when he's getting phone calls from the group and he's up in Coeur d'Alene, do I think he's saying we should go with Drew? Yeah. Do I think George Payton, deep down, is thinking we should go with Drew? Yeah. But he also has given Vic Fangio everything possible, everything Vic Fangio needs to succeed. And I don't think he was going to say, yeah, let's put together the highest-priced defense in football, bring back Von Miller, bring back Kareem Jackson, sign Ronald Darby, bring in Kyle Fuller, draft Pat Surtain, and then force him to play a quarterback he doesn't want. So he's given him everything he wants. He's letting him make the decision. This is 100% on Vic Fangio, which as a non-Fangio guy is the one upside to it because he pushes all his chips into the middle of the table. If they don't make the playoffs this year with that defense, and your quarterback, and as cupcake of the schedule as you can possibly have in the NFL.
It is, yes.
If you don't make the playoffs this year, you're never going to make the playoffs as a head coach. Like, what formula, if this isn't the formula for Vic Fangio, what is? So I think George Payton probably deferred to his head coach and said, all right, it's put up or shut up time. You get everything you want, including the quarterback you want. And it is a colossal blunder. It is a big mistake. It is a short-term kind of decision that bad organizations make. And it pains me to say that, but it's a bad organization when you're making a decision based on how do we make sure Vic Fangio gets out of September.
Well, some of this with George Payton, too, remember. He's waited for this job for a long time, too. And he's a first-time GM, and he would probably like to get some wins. I understand the long-term view, but he'd like to come in and be able to show, look, I can win. I can make a difference in this team and turn them into winners. So there's a little bit of that, and George Payton didn't have to bring in Teddy Bridgewater. If the plan was to go with Drew Locke and George Payton was in on that, they could have done that, but instead they made calls on Matt Stafford.
Yep, significant upgrade.
They went on, at least before the legal issues appeared, Deshaun Watson.
Significant upgrade.
Aaron Rodgers.
Significant upgrade.
And even Sam Darnold kicked the tires on Sam Darnold.
Which would have been the equivalent of bringing in Teddy Bridgewater. Would have been like, maybe. Here's the funny thing about
it. And maybe even a little more upside there even, too.
Right. I probably would have been happier with Sam Darnold winning this job than Teddy Bridgewater because there's so little ceiling. The problem with this quarterback competition, the problem with the change was, if you bring in Matthew Stafford, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, I would even put in that category. I mean, he was an MVP candidate before he got hurt. Aaron Rodgers for sure. Or if you go draft with Justin Fields, Mac Jones, at least you're making a change or bringing in someone who is a significant upgrade. The problem here is they brought in somebody who at best, I don't think he's an upgrade at all, but at best is a marginal upgrade. I don't even know that there are a lot of people in Team Teddy who would say, yeah, he's way, way better than
Drew. He's not way better.
He's not.
I would say that he's marginally better simply because if you do look over the body of work, the touchdown interception ratio and the completion percentage especially are far, far higher. And in today's NFL, and especially on this Broncos team, the goal is more about reducing turnovers and mistakes that will kill you because those yards between the 20s are relatively cheap. The rules have even made it. So.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I think it's an upgrade. But look, there's no way to slice it. These two guys were bottom 10 quarterbacks last year.
Exactly. And I'm with you. I'm Team Drew, and I will even say that I think right now, today, yeah, Teddy Bridgewater is a slightly better quarterback.
If you were to play a game, you had to say, I have to win Sunday. Yes.
Yes, I would do that. But I think that sort of myopic, short-term, short-sighted view is what gets you in a bad situation. It's what convinces you to give Case Keenum big money, to bring in Joe Flacco, to continue to think, hey, if we just can have a guy who can manage the game and not make mistakes, we can rely on this defense and we're going to win. This will be the sixth consecutive year. I guess you maybe could throw out last year because of Drew Lock, but at least the fifth time in 6 years, we've been sold that exact same formula.
Right. Exactly.
It didn't work any of the other times. So why is it going to work now? And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work, you're back to square one. That, I think, is the frustrating part for me and for those in Broncos country who don't like this decision, is because I would rather go with Drew Lock. And if he stinks, it's the same rationale I had with Paxton Lynch, by the way,
mm-hmm.
instead of Trevor Siemian. If he stinks, great. You go 4-13 and you're picking in the top six or seven. Awesome. Right. And if he's awesome or it clicks or he shows a ton of potential, you win 10-11 games. And man, 10-11 games with Drew Lock and where that trajectory could go, you're on to something. Either of those scenarios is better than stuck in the middle, which is exactly where they've been for so long. And it just feels like, I mean, we might as well play Sonny and Cher, I Got You, Babe, because it is Groundhog Day in Broncos country. It's a little bit of a different characters, different people playing the roles, but it's the exact same storyline.
The Broncos, to a certain extent, got fooled by their Super Bowl 50 win. And what I mean is that win, taking nothing away from it whatsoever, an all-time great defense, a great run. I understand that Peyton Manning was not the same guy he was, but he was still Peyton Manning. And I've talked to players this team. You've talked to players on this team. And they said, look, even though he couldn't throw like he used to, he still knew all the plays that the Panthers were going to run before they ran him.
Yeah.
And was able to get you in the positions to succeed and check down into a run or whatever you needed to do and make sure they eliminated mistakes. I think the Broncos underrated Manning's impact on that postseason run because just the stats weren't there and thought that he was really no different than Trent Dilfer at the time. And that's not fair. That's not fair to Manning. But the other catch about it is that was an anomalous win. You go over the last 15 to 20 years of Super Bowl winners, they don't look like the Broncos. And I know the old axiom, you know, your defense wins championships. And I'm not discounting defense. I'm a defense first guy. I'm fine with ugly football. I'm fine with running the ball and winning tight games. That doesn't bother me. But realistically, if you want to win the Super Bowl, you have a top 10 offense and a serviceable defense. And that's what you do to win nowadays. The Broncos are still looking at something that now we're talking 6 years removed from that championship. A football generation is closer to 3 years. And the game already becomes borderline unrecognizable from the 3 to 4 years prior. The Broncos have now gone basically a couple multiple generations of simply believing that what worked 6 years ago, it would work if they just got the right people.
Yeah.
And they've read the room wrong. The NFL doesn't function like that. And here's the trick. It really didn't back in 2015 either.
No, they were the aberration. So they're trying to repeat an aberration instead of saying, what's the formula that works 9 out of 10 times? Right? Like NFL Network's doing their top 100 players in the league. The top 4 quarterbacks, we don't know what the order is going to be yet, but it's Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Tom Brady.
Yep.
Not coincidentally, all 4 quarterbacks were in the AFC and NFC title games last year.
Right.
Like those were the final 4 teams left. They had the 4 best quarterbacks in the league. And Josh Allen being in this list. Okay, so my whole theory about how they're too short term. He's the best example. We're in win now mode, so we signed Case Keenum in March. We can't draft Josh Allen in April. We're going to draft Bradley Chubb. And if Bradley Chubb hadn't fallen, we're trading that pick. Because we have Case Keenum because we're in win now mode. You're not. You're not in win now mode. You're not a championship contender with Case Keenum. You're not a champ ever. You're not a championship contender with Teddy Bridgewater. And so my theory is on week one, if you go into the season with a quarterback starting that you can't imagine your team winning a Super Bowl with. Now, some of them are longer shots than others, but you can't imagine it. Then you're a bad organization. I can imagine Trevor Lawrence someday leading the Jaguars. Zach Wilson leading the Jets. I can't imagine Andy Dalton leading the Bears. It's why they're foolish. It's why it's a bad organization. Jameis Winston. I can see him winning it. Could you see Sean Payton turning him around and
Absolutely.
All of a sudden he turns into a...
Look, after the year in which he threw 30 picks, I was lobbying to have him here in Denver because he knew he was going to get dumped. You're like, wait a minute. The guy still led the league in yardage and touchdown passes.
Exactly.
There's not like there's nothing to work with here.
Exactly. And you could see that. So those are good organizations. They're not all going to work out, obviously, but at least it's an organization that is on a trajectory that you can realistically see actually hitting the moon.
I think they did it right when you look at someone like Patrick Surtain, although there wasn't much of a gamble there. But the quarterback position, there's always a gamble. And what's bothered me about the way the Broncos have pursued this since Manning retired is that at the quarterback position, right, you know, we can let the guys on both the morning and afternoon drive argue about how to go get a quarterback any way they want till they're blue in the face. But here's the deal. Nobody ever really knows, right? Look, is it quite possible that Trevor Lawrence may be a pedestrian NFL quarterback? Sure.
Yep.
Is it possible that Justin Fields is a bust? Sure.
Yep.
Is it possible that Josh Allen never has a season again like he did last year? Yes.
For sure.
Entirely possible.
For sure.
But you have to gamble on greatness rather than settle for mediocrity. I would rather try to go get that guy who could be an A student than get the guy that I know will be a solid C. Even if that guy that could be an A student might end up being a D student too. Because I need the A guy to make the Super Bowl. And if you're not trying to do that, then what's the point?
I'm 100% in agreement with you. What you are, though, is what this team has now said their goal is. George Payton said it at the media barbecue the day before training camp started. We're hoping to play relevant games in November and December.
Right.
This used to be a team.
Sounds like the Rockies.
Right. Right. We want to be relevant until training camp.
We'd like to at least keep you interested until football season starts.
Exactly. When Pat Bowlen was here, he would always go on with Irvin Joe, and he would jokingly say, we're going to go 19-0. But the message was, it is Super Bowl or bust. Now, clearly, they weren't always a Super Bowl contender, but that was the goal. Now, it's we want to be relevant in November and December. We're trying to save Vic Fangio's job. that leads you down paths that are Teddy Bridgewater versus paths that are Drew Lock, because at least he has some potential. Or fine, if you say neither one of them was it, great. Then you know where this organization
messed
up.
They
should have taken Justin Fields, because he at least could be that guy.
Yep.
If this is the fact that Teddy Bridgewater won this job makes that decision on draft day even more egregious.
It makes it disastrous. And it was always disastrous because, look, you may believe in Drew Lock's potential. I get all that. But I think even the most ardent Drew Lock fan would have to say that over the last couple of years, you've had to revise his ceiling down.
Without a doubt.
There's no question that in most cases, and you can argue what you can argue COVID, you can argue new offensive coordinator, you can argue that every other team dealt with more or less the same thing. And Teddy Bridgewater, by the way, is dealing with a new offensive coordinator this year.
Yeah.
So you can make whatever excuses you'd like. But in the end, as Bill Parcells used to say, you are what your record says you are. And Drew Lock was tied for the league lead in interceptions and atop of turnovers and dead last in completion percentage. The truth of the matter is, no matter how much you believe in him, even Josh Allen wasn't at that level at his worst. And you're generally really lucky that you're even on a team, let alone in a competition to start. And the fact that that's even what they were looking at and going, that might be okay. That's where the problem began.
Without a doubt.
Because even with Drew Lock, even if you believe in his potential, after that season, I don't think you can realistically look at it and go, he's still going to be a borderline Hall of Famer, six-time pro. No. No, because those guys don't have those seasons. And you know, you and I had the little Twitter spat about it when you put up some of the numbers with guys. And I punched back with all these numbers. And, yeah, you could talk about the bad years that some of those other quarterbacks had in certain years. But they were still light years better than Drew Lock in every way except for raw number of interceptions, which isn't a totally fair way to evaluate.
Well, and whether it's on the station since Wednesday when the news came down on Twitter, you know, I've sort of been – positioned here is Team Drew. And so let me make sure this is clear.
Oh, you hopped in that, Sam.
I am Team Drew when the options are Drew and Teddy.
Right.
That's where I'm Team
and that's
Drew.
That's fair.
From the day the season ended, I was all
team
in.
Team new quarterback.
Yeah, I was all in on it. But I said over and over and over again when the options were thrown out there were guys like Andy Dalton, I have no interest in that. I have an interest in a significant upgrade. If it's not a significant upgrade, then keep trying to develop the guy you have. That was my position. So, again, all those veterans you listed, Stafford, Deshaun Watson,
yeah, they
Aaron
weren't coming
Rodgers,
in to compete with Drew Lock.
Right.
They would have been coming in to replace him.
Right. And if you draft Justin Fields at 9 or Mac Jones at 9, he's coming in. It's his job.
He might not be the first week, but it's his job.
He's the future.
Right.
Would have had no problem with that because we've seen enough to say it's time to move on from Drew Lock. Yeah. Okay. It's just not time to move on from Drew Lock to a guy that we can seriously debate back and forth whether or not he's better.
Yeah.
That, to me, makes this a silly, silly competition. The whole thing has been a charade from the get-go.
Let me give you a different angle as to why I think that Teddy Bridgewater should have started. And I get all the arguments you've made. I think that we have a better idea of who Drew Lock is. I talked about it last night on my show. Fan late night that I think that Drew Lock has a very lucrative career in front of him. I think if he handles things the way he handled it this week, he's going to be an in-demand backup in this league for a decade. With what those guys are getting paid, he's going to walk away from this league in 10, 12 years with $50, $60 million in his pocket.
Yeah, would you rather have him have to play a game or two or Trevor Siemian, who's still in the league?
Yeah,
right?
Well, he'd still rather have Drew Lock.
Or you know, Brandon Allen, who's still kicking around.
Yeah, I'd rather have Drew Lock. I think there's a very, very good situation in front of him for his career. But let me give a different angle that I just haven't heard that often. Last year, the Broncos as an organization basically said, we're going with Drew Lock. There's going to be bumps in the road. We know it because there always are. And they asked the other 52 guys on the roster, you know what? We're going to have to go out there and you're going to have to risk your tails and do everything else. And some of you are going to be free agents and it might not look good for your numbers, but you're going to have to kind of just live with it because we need to find out about Drew Lock. It might be too much to ask some of those players to do it for a second year in a row, because at a certain time, you do have a locker room full of guys. Some of them are free agents, Cortland Sutton, for example, obviously Von Miller, Kareem Jackson. We could go on and on and on. But it's a lot to ask those guys, hey, we know we kind of asked you to throw one of your years of a career that it can be pretty short, just kind of as a log on the fire. You mind doing it again? Players kind of know. And while I get what you're saying, with all due respect, I think that's a fan's perspective. And I understand it because, look, and I understand that's why most of our listeners and people who have gotten a hold of us feel that way, because you can be a fan for the rest of your life. These other guys in the locker room can't be a player for the rest of their lives, and they may not be interested to throw a potential other year as a log on the fire because they did this last year for Drew Lock.
I get it.
A different argument.
I get the perspective, but here would be my two rebuttals. I think that's a better argument for Trevor Siemian over Paxton Lynch, because I think it's pretty reasonable to say that in that locker room there were a lot of guys who said Paxton Lynch can't play.
Correct.
There are probably a lot of guys in there that say Teddy Bridgewater is better than Drew Lock. I don't know that there's a lot of guys who look at it and go, Drew Lock can't play. Like, he can play. He's going to be in this league. You said it at the beginning of that.
Yeah, he
for
can play.
10 years.
Sure.
Paxton Lynch is playing in Canada. So it's not as though they're forcing a guy that everybody in the building knows can't play and they're forcing him in there. The other part of it is, I don't think I'm coming at it from a fan's perspective, although I am admittedly a fan. I think I'm coming at it from a GM perspective. And I've told this story a couple of times today already, and I wrote about it at denverfan.com, but I'll share it one more time. I was on with Chad Brown on Monday, and I asked him if he'd ever been in this situation. And he said, yeah, in 2001 in Seattle, we had Trent Dilfer, who had just won a Super Bowl in Baltimore, mm-hmm. by managing the game and relying on his defense. And we had Matt Hasselbeck, who we just traded for.
Right.
The players all wanted Trent Dilfer, especially the defensive players. They wanted Trent Dilfer.
I mean, he wasn't done yet. He already had a ring.
Right.
You know, you kind of get the idea that's our safer play, right?
Right. Well, Mike Holmgren, who had job security and a resume because he'd won a Super Bowl in Green Bay, went with Matt Hasselbeck. He took the long view.
Right.
Well,
and he was also the GM
at the time.
He held both roles. Right.
In year one, it didn't look good, right? Matt Hasselbeck went 5-7. Trent Dilfer went 4-0 that year. And they didn't go to the playoffs. So that's on Mike
Holmgren.
Looked
like a misread, right.
The next year, they don't make the playoffs again with Matt Hasselbeck. Mike Holmgren gets fired as GM. He stays as head coach, but he's no longer GM. Starting the next year, 2003 to 2007, 5 straight years of going to the playoffs, a trip to the Super Bowl, 3 Pro Bowls for Matt Hasselbeck, and Matt Hasselbeck is going in the Seahawks Ring of Honor. Trent Dilfer, since that 2001 training camp, went 13-18. The players wanted the guy that could help them win now. Somebody had to be the visionary to say, but what's best for this organization? Look, all the guys that had to suffer through Drew Lock last year, they all got paid. Justin Simmons still got paid.
Oh, yeah.
Shelby Harris got paid.
Sure.
I mean, it's not as though Von Miller, you know, got run out of town because they went 5-11 and he didn't get his $18 million bucks. So I hear what you're saying, but I think it would be I think it would be something that the front office and the head coach should have considered if it was clearly like one guy can't play and this is going to be ugly. And one guy can. I think this was even Steven coin toss. I don't think it's that hard of a sell in the locker room.
I don't know how much, and we really will probably never know, at least for a long time, about the relationship with John Elway and George Payton, especially in the early days of Payton's tenure here.
Yeah.
But I was a little surprised, quite frankly, because you see with new GMs, and I thought about this Lock situation and a potential new quarterback situation. And quite frankly, I wondered why they retained the coaching staff. Because this was part of the problem. So if you wanted a long-term vision as the GM, you should have installed people who can come along on the ride with you.
Yes.
And in this case, you don't know if you have that, but you could have. So the time to tear the Band-Aid off was probably last year, so you could get on with business right now, as opposed to now have this year where you're essentially treading water. And that's not on Vic Fangio. That's on George Payton and John Elway in some combination.
It is, and here's the other thing that concerns me as a fan. I'll put my fan hat on. I think the decision they made, it has the best possible chance of putting them in no man's land. Because if you're George Payton, you have to look at it and say, look, if they go 5-12, it's easy. You're moving on from both quarterbacks, moving on from Vic Fangio. Here we go.
You're thinking about trading up if you have to. Right.
You audited the season, and now you got 5 years left on your deal, and you move forward. If it works out, well, then you don't have a decision to make either. You probably say, hey, we went, 11-6 with Teddy. Let's give him a deal, bring him back. Let's extend Vic. We're going to keep him. That's easy. But what do you do if you go 9-8 and don't make the playoffs? And Vic Fangio improved by 3.5
now,
games.
Yeah, now do you remove him?
Right. And you get rid of the quarterback who just led you to the first winning season since Super Bowl 50, or I guess since 2016. That's tough, too. But do you really want to, if you're 9-8, give an extension to Vic Fangio? Do you really want to re-up with Teddy Bridgewater? You're stuck in no man's land. And that's, I think, why fans are really most upset about this, because we can see where this is going to land.
Yeah.
And that is the most likely landing spot. And it's worst case scenario. Like 9-8 to me is worse than 5-12 or 4-13. Because you're not going to the playoffs either way. At least then you know what to do with the quarterback, know what to do with the head coach, and you have a better draft pick. That, I think, is the other situation that George Payton has suddenly put into play here that has fans worried of, like, how are we going to get off this carousel? Well, 9-8 ain't getting you off the carousel.
You have an inexperienced GM, a relatively inexperienced head coach, and now you have a roster that is built to win right now. Now, what does that really mean? It might mean that this season is kind of all or nothing for the Broncos in more ways than you might think. We'll explain next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
We're bringing a little bit of a change up here. We're bringing in El Cambio. Troy Rank joins us, our Denver 7 Broncos insider. Thanks, James Marilat, for stopping in. Troy, how you doing?
Better now. I'm here.
the thing we were talking about earlier is with the decision to start Teddy Bridgewater now, we basically know, even in counting kicker and putter, we basically know who all 24 of the Broncos starters are today, right now. There really aren't any positions to necessarily set aside coming into this last preseason game. And the interesting part of that is when you look at it, everyone looks at this defense and says, nah, they could have a top five defense or even better. And that may very well be true. At the same time, this is kind of one and done. And I think that's something people haven't really looked at. They're excited about how this defense has been built and the roster building involved in it. As many as basically seven of the defensive starters are unrestricted free agents after this year. They're not all coming back. So how much does it really mean to have this defense this year when you kind of had to just settle on a quarterback a week and a half, 2 weeks before the season starts?
Yeah, they're in a weird spot. As you mentioned, they're on the kind of parallel tracks of trying to develop and create a different type of roster with more depth and more athleticism, while also in a bit of win-now mode with the defense. You know, Kyle Fuller, Bryce Callahan, they're not coming back if Vic Fangio's not here.
Right. So
that's why the Surtain pick, while frustrating, and I was once advocating for Justin Fields because he fell to them, not necessarily to trade for him, but once he fell to him, I would have taken him, and I've said that multiple times, even if he didn't play this year.
Me too.
You could have taken him with Teddy Bridgewater and moved on from Locke in that scenario. But the Surtain pick can grow in significance if both Callahan and Fuller leave, which is possible, certainly possible, if Coach Fangio is not here after this year. But there are, like you said, there's not a lot of change on this team. Right tackle's Bobby Massey. It's his job to lose. You're going to see some wrinkles in inside linebacker with Justin Sternad and Baron Browning, I think, are going to find niche roles and coverage. And Browning could even move outside if they needed him to, but he's got some versatility. But you're right. There is a bit of a win-now mode with this defense, and that's where this Teddy experiment, if it fails, then do you kind of revamp the defense like you've tried to go do that with the offense? I will say this. I do trust George Payton. He has a plan. He works 18 hours a day. He stays on this plan. He creates a collaboration. His scouts are buying in. He's creating ownership. While some of it isn't completely aligned, because I would have brought in my own coach if I was a GM, he got on late enough 3 weeks in after the season that he would have had to have kind of his own Sean McVay or somebody of that nature, a Brandon Staley, in his back pocket to make that change. Because once he got to that point in the offseason, was his coach available that he would have liked? Did he want to redo everything in that short of time? He decided not to give Fangio a chance. But you're right. This defense, and this is Fangio's baby. If they're going to win, I still say they have to score 25 points a game.
Yes.
I mean, come on. What are we talking about?
It's today's NFL. You have to do it.
Last year, they set records for touchdowns, touchdown passes, completion percentage.
No offseason, no preseason.
Yeah, like, come on. There's no excuses.
This year?
There's no excuses. You have to score 25 points a game to be a playoff team. The only teams that weren't last year were like Rams and Bears were an outlier.
Yes.
They got hot at the end of the year with a bad schedule. And they're the outlier in that how do you get into the playoffs if you have the worst quarterback in your own division? they did with Trubisky last year and got in. It's hard to do and reach the playoffs if you're the fourth quarterback in your division.
Do the Broncos have that fourth quarterback in this AFC West?
Yes, right now they do. And with all due respect to Teddy Bridgewater, I have an open mind about it. But Derek Carr was 27 touchdowns, 9 picks last year. Everyone acts like
he's always
Carr's
in the
terrible.
Top 5 in completion percentage.
Yeah, they act like he's terrible. He's not terrible. He's a very serviceable quarterback. Is he top 15? Probably not, but he's 27-9. That's 3-1.
That's a guy that's not top 15.
The Broncos
get you an idea how hard it is to get a quarterback that's good in this league. That guy's not top 15.
I mean, he might be on some list. It's just because of the lack of postseason, lack of big games.
But he's in that middle third, that sort of mushy middle third where it's very nebulous. It's just sort of beauty is in the eye of the beholder type stuff.
And that's where they need Bridgewater to be, or a combo of Bridgewater and Locke of 22 touchdowns, 10 picks. 25 touchdowns, 10 picks. Somewhere in that range of 2.5-1, 3-1 ratio. And can Teddy be that guy? I mean, he's never been above, 15 touchdown passes.
Right.
He's going to have a career year and protect the football. They can win this way, but it's such a razor's edge because they're going to have to run the football. They're going to have to do play action and keep the games close enough either to where it's tied or they have a short lead, a small lead, to allow their great defense to win games. Your defense can't be great if it doesn't get takeaways. And I've tried to explain this to people. You can't get takeaways if you're constantly trailing because it's a risk-averse league, and you know this, Sean. The other team, they just don't take chances. 3rd and 8 on their own 25, up 10, what do they do? Run the football, punt. We're going to dare you to go 80 yards because we don't think you can. In the most cases with the Broncos, the last 5 years, they couldn't. So that's why being even – or, you know, up 3 allows Bradley Chubb, allows Von Miller, Justin Simmons, your best players to control the outcome. If you're down by 10 going into the fourth quarter, they're not controlling the outcome. That goes right back to the offense and throwing 35 times a game. And I think last 2 years when they've thrown over 30 times a game, they're 3-17.
Yeah.
And they don't win when they throw a lot.
No, they don't. And I guess that's what makes this decision so interesting about Bridgewater, because it's so easy to look at it, and I understand a lot of fans can look at it that way and say, yeah, but there's all this young offensive talent, and KJ Hamler can run deep, and so don't you want Drew Lock to run deep? Look, some of this decision to pick Bridgewater is driven by that defense for the exact reason you said. And the other thing that you can't do is turn the ball over and keep putting that defense on the field instead of catching their breath and in bad field position, in negative space where they have to make an amazing stop to even keep the team from getting 3. All these things have been problems for the Broncos over the last few years. So part of the decision to start Bridgewater has to do with exactly what Pat Shurmur said in OTAs. Fewer mistakes. That was the one thing that Shurmur said was going to be the primary driver of this decision.
And they can win this way if they run the football.
They have to run and control the time of possession.
Right. You look at Baker Mayfield last year with the Browns. His career was starting to careen into a ditch. I mean, he's just throwing an insane amount of interceptions. He's turning the ball over, putting the ball in harm's way. And then Kevin Stefanski, you could tell, went to him and said, we're going to run the football with Nick Chubb. They have a stable of backs, but we're going to run the ball with Nick Chubb. And we're going to get after it that way. And then Baker, the last 9 games was like 19 touchdowns and 3 picks. Because they're running off play action. They're getting leads. They're controlling clock. And that's the formula. And Baltimore does this too, to some degree. And Lamar Jackson's part of their run game, clearly. So there is an avenue of success. Cleveland is a better example because, you know, for me, Lamar Jackson is such a, you know, unicorn in the way he plays the position.
Right.
But Baker Mayfield, is he, you know, this crazy great quarterback who's so much better than a Bridgewater or Locke? Not necessarily. I'm saying he's better, but he's not significantly better. He's not a top 10 quarterback. That is the avenue. If you look at how you can win in this league with marginal quarterback play, even the Rams to some degree. Rams with Goff last year ran the heck out of the football. They were the number one ranked defense. And I know you like, and people say, you can win with defense. I will, but you were right. You can't win with defense consistently in the regular season.
No.
You've got to score 25 points a game in the regular season. Then in the playoffs, you can win with defense. It's like pitching in baseball. You can win. You need starting pitching to get there. And then in the playoffs, because of the days off, you can win with a great bullpen with starters going 4 or 5 innings. You can't do that during the course of 162 because you'd have to have 8 guys with options bringing in because your starters are going 4 innings. Your bullpen would be maxed by June 1st. In football, the same thing. Tampa Bay won with defense. Everyone said, Tampa Bay won with defense. Look what they did with the Chiefs. Look what they did with Rodgers. Look what they did with the Saints.
They had Tom Brady.
And that's,
come on.
That's three games, though.
Exactly.
And they still score points.
Right.
But you can win when you get under the velvet rope into the club. You can get onto the dance floor.
Right.
And go John Travolta. But you're not getting into the dance floor under the velvet rope if you're scoring 20 points a game. And that's the interesting thing with this, is when they stop running the football, can they still push the ball downfield with Bridgewater? Can he have a game where he's 18 for 31 with two touchdowns and no picks? Can he win that way with 220 yards? Because if you're going to tell me that you're going to ask Teddy to win with 300 yards passing and multiple touchdowns and no turnovers, he might have one game like that too, but I just think that is not realistic based on his track record. When he went with the Saints for five games, 5-0, Sean. Mm-hmm.
And he looked great.
Nine touchdowns, two picks. That's right around.
In five games, nine touchdowns, not even two a game.
Yeah, right. So that is the formula. And the Saints had a great defense. But the defense can't be great if the offense isn't functional. And don't even get me started about special teams. Because good teams win in the margins. The Broncos constantly sabotage themselves in the margins.
Yes.
And I'm over that. Like, they got to figure that out. They've got better athletes. The team's deeper than it's been since 2016, a team that went 9-7. This team reminds me a lot of that team. Really good defense, questions at quarterback, and where are they going to be in the margins? They've got to be, at the very least, Sean, neutral in the margins on special teams. I don't want to hear it. They've got better athletes. They've got depth from the draft. They got to just figure it out. I mean, when I watched that Seattle game and a 46-yard kick return, and they've punted four times in the preseason, and one of them has been blocked?
Right.
Like, what are we talking about? Like, enough.
And it would be something if it wasn't regular. This is year after year stuff.
Again, for an offense that's not scoring, so, oh, rely on our defense. Oh, and maybe once a game we're going to put them in harm's way at their own 35 because a punt got blocked or we give up a big return. Really? It's not enough that your offense is kicking your defense on the shins every game? We got to have the special teams throw a punch to the throat, too? I mean, really?
And that's a hard thing to ask. Obviously, it's a hard thing to ask. The path for the Broncos is, as Troy said, it's viable. It's there. There is a possibility, and there's a path they can walk to success. It is narrow. And it does have to do with the way this offense is called. Pat Shurmur was brought in ostensibly last year to open up the offense. Now we're talking about making it a little more conservative and safe. Can Shurmur make that adjustment? What we've seen in the preseason may give us some clues. We can talk about that next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
It is Stokely and Zach, but it is also not Stokely and Zach. You can tell because the voices are different. My name's Sean Drosar, host of The Fan late night, 10 to midnight on weekdays. And with me is 10% of the Broncos insider, Troy Rake. Nice to sit down with Troy the day before the final preseason game, such as it is. And we'll certainly get into that during the program. But we were talking a little bit about the offense. And under Pat Shurmur last year, it seemed to me, Troy, that Shurmur basically was brought in, and I make fun of it a little bit. Every year there's sort of a catchphrase. Last year, the 2020 catchphrase in the around the NFL was take the top off the defense, right? That's what everyone liked to say. It was the 2020 version of the good in a phone booth, fluid hips, whichever one it is that year. And Shurmur was brought in to go 11 personnel, go three wide, chuck it downfield because you have all those receivers. That was the idea. It felt as if there was even a little bit of pressure on Shurmur to do that so much that it didn't feel like the playbook and the play calling was necessarily tapered to do what Drew Lock did best. This year, however, and even in the limited two preseason games that we've seen, there have been clearly different ways that the plays have been called for Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock. What does that mean potentially for Shurmur going forward this year?
Yeah, it was curious because in practice they did not tailor it to each quarterback.
Correct.
Because I asked that question.
And they even talked to me. I heard the answer to your question. He actually said no.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to do that.
Yeah. I'm like, when are you going to start tailoring it to their strengths to get a better feel of what the guy can really do? It was like running a generic, you know, generic mode or computer mode in a computer and not tailoring it to your strength or customizing it. They customized it in the first two games. The first game, Teddy was in shotgun way more. In the second game, he was under center some more. The first game, Drew Lock was under center predominantly. Only five snaps, I think, of his 20 was he in shotgun. And then you could tell in the Seattle game they wanted to see Drew operate out of shotgun to see. He wasn't as comfortable in terms of production. Some of the line, there were breakdowns up front. But that's part of it with the second team is some of the line adjustment on him. Is he able to get out of harm's way? He fumbled twice. He recovered them both. But is that enough to spook a coaching staff to say, you know what? This is a team that led the world in takeaways last year. The ball's on the ground here. And that's what part of the nuances that Teddy brought was this fact that he's better with the cadence, getting in and out of the huddle, getting the call, getting the snap, all stuff fans don't care about and really shouldn't care about. Coaches do. That is on their grade sheet. And so Teddy does those things well. And you can argue a veteran quarterback with this young developing offense, maybe he is that secret sauce that allows Hamler, Judy, and Fant to reach their potential. Hamler is going to be a little more difficult if you're talking just pure deep routes, but he's a slot guy. I mean, he doesn't like he can only catch passes 50 yards from line of scrimmage. I do think if it were up to me and they were completely even, I would have gone with Bridgewater for his connection with Jerry Judy alone.
Yes.
They are in sync, completely in sync.
Yes, you can see that.
Teddy figured out in OTAs that, man, if I throw it to this guy 3 yards, he's going to get the other 7 or 8.
Like, that's one of the things that I think fans may have missed at times is I understand the highlight reel plays like we saw Lock to K.J. Hamler twice in the first game. I get all that. But it was a Lock pass to Jerry Judy that I thought really kind of showed what the Broncos need to do. It's great to be able to throw the ball 50 yards downfield and hit a guy, but you might complete that, once a week, 2 or 3 games?
Yeah, you only take 2 shots downfield a game.
And it's
maybe
generally
3?
To just keep people honest. You're not even really expecting to complete it. It's sort of a nice if you can. And when you look at a guy like Judy, and even to Hamler, there was all that comparison with Hamler with Tyreek Hill, right? That was basically what they were trying to get, a poor man's version of Tyreek Hill. And I get that Tyreek Hill makes big plays, but if you go over all his touchdowns, a lot of these are just 15 to 17-yard slants that Patrick Mahomes hits him with. Just lets Tyreek Hill do his thing. You don't have to make a Hamler or a Judy or a Sutton or even a Noah Fant. You don't have to hit them deep. You don't have to throw them the yards after catch. Let them do it. And at times it seems like Drew Lock was focused on taking all those yards himself, whereas Bridgewater and Judy early on seemed to understand, look, I'll hit you on time and on target, and then it's your job, kid.
Yeah, and with Judy hitting him on time, that is part of it. Is he's got to eliminate the drops. He'd be the first to tell you that. But some of it, he and Locke were just never in sync. And I'm not making excuses for the drops. I'm just saying there were like multiple factors at work. Like it's just like sometimes with a catcher with a certain pitcher, the ball breaks late and it looks like they're constantly catching it with their thumb, can't frame a pitch. It was kind of like that with Locke and Judy. They had the worst completion percentage of over 20 yards of any quarterback and receiver in the NFL last year.
And
they could not get on the same page.
Pro Football Focus said that last year, Jerry Judy had the lowest percentage of catchable balls in the NFL thrown to him.
So again,
dead last.
It's not an excuse, but they just weren't in sync.
Right. And some of that can be on Lock, the bad throw, and some of that can be Judy not being in the place you expect. It's not necessarily pinning it on either guy,
but
because
they're both
involved.
But I haven't seen that with T and Teddy.
No.
T and Teddy are in sync.
So they've been on the same wavelength since really the second they walked into OTAs
and
are ready to go.
And I do believe that we need to be fair to Courtland Sutton and temper expectations the first few games because he has not been the Courtland Sutton of 2 years ago yet in training camp. Doesn't mean he can't get there, but to me, I used the example of Bradley Chubb last year. It took the third game against the Jets, I think it was the third or the fourth game against the Jets, to where he finally trusted his knee to bend on his pass rush. He had the 2.5 sacks. He was just, writing a diary of havoc. Courtland Sutton has been reluctant to let it loose in training camp with his left knee. And I believe that's why it's important to see him tomorrow night. Let him get hit. Let him get tackled. Let him block. He needs to clear that mental hurdle. But all that said, I do believe he'll be on a play count on the opener. I don't think he's going to be able to go the whole time. He told me, I asked him yesterday, and he's like, I absolutely don't want to play count. 100% no. 1,000% no. I think the training staff might put him on one and say 40 plays or whatever it is. That's why Jerry Jeudy becomes significantly more important these first few weeks, because Teddy Bridgewater is going to lean on him, and they really need to get Noah Fant going. He's been a bit of a ghost in training camp, partly by injury, but even in Seattle, they weren't calling any plays for him. They've got to get the tight end passing game going. Maybe just Sauerbaugh, he's part of it. That's fine, but whatever it is, I prefer it's Fant. They've got to have that underneath route. It can't be run the ball and then look for the 15, 20 yarder. That is not Teddy Bridgewater. That does not work for him. But you're right. Shurmur was brought in part because Vic Fangio wanted deep strikes down the field. And the Giants were like first or second in completions of more than 20 yards. They ranked in like the top five in terms of attempts of passes in the air of more than 20 yards. And Drew Lock was more than willing to do that.
Oh, yeah.
The problem was he wasn't completing enough of them. I mean, you're under 60%. I was talking to Charlie Weiss the other day on his radio show, and he was like, what's going on with Lock? And I'm like, well, he's at 57% completion percentage. That doesn't work in the modern NFL. And he's like, that didn't work in the 80s. Like, you got to be minimum right now in the current NFL, like 63 to 70%. The average last year, Sean, was like 69%. Average completion percentage. So that's what you've got to think about. But that is too, and James Merrilett brought it up when he was beginning the show here, you've got to involve the running backs. Melvin Gordon can catch the football. Javonte Williams can catch the football. We've got to see two or three design screens when we talk about Teddy Bridgewater. They've got to use the running back in the passing game. And when Drew Lock had his best game, when was it? Carolina. They used the running backs in the passing game, and they used the tight ends and the dump downs. It's got to be variable. It can't be run the football, 20-yard strike.
Right.
Run the football, it's not there. 20-yard strike. Like, that is going to lead to three wide, shotgun, and turnovers. That's what we've seen. We know how that movie ends, and it doesn't end any other way than, as I say, Thelma and Louise going off the cliff. That's how that movie
very
ends.
Very dramatic, but not with a great ending.
Right, and Broncos country, the people I'm around at the grocery store and around, they're over that.
Yeah.
That's why I do suggest, as much as if you're a Drew Lock fan, you still keep an open mind, because there is a path to a winning record with this team.
Yes, there is.
They can win seven games at home. Their home schedule is comically easy. And I joke about this, but, you know, they have 6 to 7 cupcakes on their home schedule. But unfortunately, all those teams see the Broncos as a pastry as well.
Right.
Because the Broncos have been terrible for 4 years. But there is a path to a winning record. If you just go Vegas chalk, they can win 9 games. They're favored in 9 games.
Which is remarkable for a team that won 5 games last year. But it shows how weak that schedule is. And you brought up the running back part, Troy. I think that's really interesting. And I think when people looked at Teddy Bridgewater's season last year, which was not good, but honestly for Bridgewater, somewhat anomalous when it comes to the touchdown-to-interception ratio. Completion percentage was still very good. But keep in mind, of course, he lost Christian McCaffrey. He was dealing with a new offensive coordinator. He went to a new team. And their leading tight end in receiving was Ian Thomas, and he didn't even have 200 yards. That's unbelievable. So they didn't call anything. But I thought what you brought up with Shurmur is interesting. They brought in Melvin Gordon last year. They were the only team that seemed interested in giving him a multi-year contract. And the first thing I thought is, well, okay, if you're going to bring in Melvin Gordon, you're going to bring in the screen game, the dump off, because it wasn't all that long ago that Melvin Gordon was considered one of the top 2 or 3 pass-catching running backs in the game.
He averaged 50 catches a year in the previous 3 seasons.
And they never even bothered with it first year.
They were the worst in the league at throwing to running backs, because they decided that Philip Lindsay couldn't catch. So every time he was in the game after, like, the Patriots game, teams knew it was a run. It was a tell that, oh, they're not throwing to him. That's what crushed Lindsay's chances here, is they wouldn't throw him the football. They give up on it. And then they finally, toward the end of the year, like, remember that Melvin Gordon's really good catching the football. I mean, he had the one great wheel route against the Steelers on a touchdown with Driscoll, but they just, like, forgot about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
which is strange to a guy you gave a 2-year, $16 million contract to be your lead running back. And you spaced one of his signature skills. Kind of a strange thing. They have to find a way to be better at that. Have you seen any indication, whether it's been in practice or the preseason, that that's going to be a focus?
Well, it seems like they're aware of it. I'm not going to say a focus, because we don't see that much of it. But it has to be part. It has to be a wrinkle that they use 2 to 3 times a game. You know, back in the day, Peyton Manning had the bubble screen. You know, and that was the personnel with Demaryius Thomas. And when you look at this personnel, whether it's Melvin Gordon, and it will be him to begin the season, or Javonte Williams, both of them can catch the ball out of the backfield. You cannot dismiss that. And what I did see, to your point, against Seattle, Teddy Bridgewater going through progressions and getting the ball to the running back in the flat with to Royce Freeman, a couple that led to 11, 13 yards. And that is a skill of he was going through the reads and then getting it to the back where he can catch it in a spot where he can turn and run, not throw it to him and he gets tackled for 2 yards. There were a couple of instances where you're like, okay, that's how that could work. You know, you go through progressions and you scan all the way back to the left side of the field, dump it down to the running back who's in a one-on-one. He makes a guy miss. Now you got 11 yards. That, so it's not maybe even not screen game, but allowing the running back to be part of the passing game.
The other part of the passing game, Detroit mentioned, of course, the tight ends. Noah Fant, at the moment, expected to be ready for the opener, but had a lingering injury. Know that Albert Okwuegbunam is coming back from the ACL surgery as well. What does that mean for the tight end position? What can they do? And I have a number about Noah Fant. I don't think most people realize how good he actually was last year. I have a stat that'll surprise you next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.